Welcome to Body Sculptors New York 6 weeks to Fitness podcast, where we hope to inform, motivate, encourage, and inspire you towards living a healthier lifestyle. And now, here's your host, the president of Body Sculptors New York, Vince Ferguson.
Welcome to 6 weeks of Fitness, episode 216. Thank you so much for joining me today. My next guest is Capra Anu, a raw foodist and author who has dedicated his life to sharing his knowledge of the power that the live food lifestyle combined with systematic fasting has on the body. Over the past 20 years, he has hosted numerous health retreats in the US and internationally, during which he guides participants through his unique approach, and he's doing some amazing things. And we're gonna get into that today on 6 weeks of Fitness. Capra Anu, thank you for coming on my show today.
Thank you for having me, brother.
You know, I first heard about you from a mutual friend, Orvel Douglas, fruitarian, and he shared with me information about you when he would go to DC, because did you have a juice bar at the time?
Yeah, I had a juice bar at the time. And Orvel, just about any time he would come through DC, it definitely would come by. And, you know, I got to learn, we got to become acquaintances, friends. You know, he was always great energy. He'd come through, you know, that was like one of his guilty pleasures.
Yes.
So, you know, you got to cheat. Even if you're doing the fruit, you got to cheat on the fruit. So it was just an honor that he would find my food and cuisine acceptable, you know, as one of his forays, you know, out of the, you know, the complete fruitarian way.
So,
great brother, great energy. definitely been following his work.
Yes.
And the, you know, all the lives that he's helped change and transform.
Yes. Yes, most definitely. But before we discuss your raw food lifestyle, I want to know, and I'm sure my audience would like to know, a little more about your backstory. Where did you grow up and what was your childhood like?
Yeah, so I grew up in a small town, upstate New York.
New York.
Monticello, New York. Monticello. Maybe 90 miles outside of New York City.
Yes.
You know, kind of midway between New York City and Binghamton, New York. And, you know, just humble beginnings, big family, very religious. My great grandmother was the first Black person in Monticello to.
Really?
Yeah. She was one of the first. Yeah, no, she was the first. She started a church. I mean, the whole story is, I'm still learning details about her story, but to be a woman back in those days, this is over 100 years ago.
Yes.
My uncle was the first Black person born in Monticello. And so my family is deeply rooted in the community. Very beautiful childhood. My mom was one of 12, so I had a lot of cousins. I mean, the church was an extended family anyway.
Yes.
And, so what I learned as an adult now is the values.
Yes.
Well, I don't necessarily follow the practices that I was taught. The values have remained. And it is a big part of even my dietary lifestyle in the sense that, you know, when I first, being my family being very religious and very a strong emphasis on the Bible,
yes.
You know, when I first got wind of Genesis 1:29, let your fruit and herb be your meat.
Nice.
Yeah. I wasn't the same after that. I wasn't the same. And what I've done is I've really sort of made that not only a big part of who I am and how and my life's work, But just to sort of also, it ties me back to my beginnings, which started in Monticello, New York. But very, very wonderful childhood, small town. Like I said, we were a lot of nature. I mean, it's a beautiful town, and it's nestled, you know, in the Catskill, New York. It's
yes,
a lot of trees. I mean, that was normal to me, right?
Yes.
Washington, D.C., yeah. Big city. I'm like, oh, man, we was a lot of nature, just in the woods all the time, you know. We were just, I mean, you know, I'm just like, wow, we didn't know how good we had it.
Right.
So even though, like, you don't have the same economic opportunities, which is why you leave, you know, you go off to college to find, you know, to get the good job and the economic opportunities. But I love growing up there. I wish my kids had that opportunity to grow up in a community as we had. I mean, just the love and the joy that we had as a family was second to none. So that was my beginning.
Yeah, that was the start. Oh, and which was a great start too. Foundation, family, can't ask for better than that, my brother.
That's right.
But what led you to become a raw foodist?
Yes. So I said what I said about, you know, the religious background.
Right.
But it was, if I could credit it to anything, you know, growing up in the 80s as a teenager, you know, I was part of, and again, Monticello wasn't New York City, but right. we were in the backyard almost. So with New York City in the proximity, there was a consciousness that came with that, you know, with, you know, Black consciousness, political consciousness, consciousness of just consciousness in general, asking questions, you know, questioning the education that we received in school. And as a really in a corner was, you know, under the umbrella of consciousness was health and wellness.
Yes.
And so when I'd come to Harlem, right. One of my first stops was always the book vendor on the street on 125th Street.
Yes.
And I was always drawn to the health books. You know, early Dr. Africa, Queen of Four,
yes.
Those are some of my first books that I read on health, but not just health, but also from a cultural perspective. So these were sort of the early seeds that was planted. Much not long after that, I would sort of put two and two together and say, you know, if veganism, vegetarianism, it's like, what's the highest level of that? Well, it's just common sense that you take food as nature, as God gives it to you, right off the tree, right off the vine, right out of the ground. And I always knew, even as a teenager, getting introduced to this philosophy of life, that would be my, I always knew, I said, even if I'm 50 years old, and I make the change, I'm going to make that change one day.
Right.
So it's interesting because a few years ago, I turned 50.
Oh, great.
But I started doing this much, really, really, really at that time. That was 30 plus years ago. It's been a good 20 something years, 25 years, almost all raw.
Wow.
Dick Gregory, I have to mention Dick Gregory, the late great Dick Gregory. He was he also planted a seed where when the first time I got to hear him lecture, he was the one who opened up the Bible and said, this is, you know, we're supposed to eat this way.
Yeah.
And I was forever a changed young man at that time, you know, 18, 19 years old.
Yes.
And so, you know, a lot of people come into this lifestyle for many different reasons. More oftentimes, it's like they're trying to correct something. They're trying, they want something. They don't want to die, things of that nature. Look, those aren't bad reasons. Those are good reasons. But for me, I wasn't sick. I was, you know, I was a young man and very active, very, I won't say I was athletic, but I was athletically inclined in terms of my desire to work out and stay fit, and always been into living my best life and getting the most out of this physical vessel. So that was really the driving, motivating force, was that, okay, I know what life is, but what can life really be? And what is the best diet to support me in that mission and that on my pathway to realizing my potential? And, you know, part of that potential is being, you know, having longevity, having just a certain high vitality, you know, just be able to do things that not only doesn't limit me, but, you know, again, the question, what is my potential? What can I do? Can I run a marathon without training? Can I do something? What can I do? And so that was also part of it. And I think, you know, when I think about the raw food movement over the years, there was a wave. I believe I came into the movement where it was definitely a wave of consciousness. And I think a lot of us were drawn to raw foods for those similar reasons, especially the younger people in my generation, where, again, we weren't sick. We weren't like doing this to stay alive, but to become more alive. If that makes
sense. Yes. More.
So I think that needs to, you know, we shouldn't take this body for granted. You know, from a spiritual perspective, I say that while we are spirit beings living in a human vessel, this physical body is a gift. And we need to treat it as such. We need to really respect it.
We
need to honor it. When I can try to kill the lowliest insect like a roach, and its desire, it's like a roach will die trying to live. It will dive off a cliff in the effort to live. It's like if a roach can do that to live, it has to tell you something about this physical life, and that there are laws and that there are practices that honor this physical. While we are beyond the physical, no one will argue that we have a spirit body,
right?
We have a physical body, but they work together. They work together. And when we can come and obviously everyone has their spiritual beliefs and their spiritual practices, but when we can honor the physical in the same way and understand that there are laws, there are rules, and we should follow those rules to the best of our ability. Right. And so all of these things I've been able to form as my part of my message. This is my life's work. I'm really beyond blessed to be in this lifestyle, to be an ambassador, to be an influencer, an educator. I'm living my best life. because being able to be in this position to support others and to inspire others, guess who is helping more than anybody? Me.
You. Yeah.
Exactly. What What more can I ask for?
Right. That is beautiful, my brother. But for those who are listening and saying, raw food, I thought about that, but what exactly is raw food?
No, great question, great question. Now, it's levels. It's definitely levels. And, you know, thinking about the raw food community and being a part of this community for almost 25 years now, wow, that is a big question because... Because even within this circle, this family, wow. I mean, on one level, you can say, you know, very quickly, fruits, vegetables, nuts, seeds, sprouts, and even, you know, if we're not talking veganism, vegetarianism, you can also include the animal kingdom as well. Because, you know, people are into raw milk and raw, or I should say raw dairy. And raw meat.
Oh, really?
Animal. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is a segment, a small segment. Most of the raw foodists that, at least what I'm familiar with, are practice raw veganism. But there is a small segment of us that also, you know, does everything, including, yeah.
Wow.
So it's nothing that's, you know, that's off limits. But even within the raw veganism, it varies greatly. You got our brother Orvel, who's a high fruitarian.
Right.
You know, so he's probably doing 80-90% fruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you have well, you have people, I eat a lot of fruit. I wouldn't necessarily consider myself a fruitarian, at least not on his level. And that's partly because of even part of my service is that I make raw cuisine.
Uh-huh.
Raw cuisine. Now, a lot of the high level fruitarians, I wouldn't put Orvel in this category, but a lot what's happened over the years is that you have sort of this conflict of interest or this debate, sort of like a soft debate. Should we be eating? Because the raw cuisine is a high fat diet. There's a lot of oil, nuts, seeds. So they're saying a lot of the fruitarians argue that it's too much fat. That hasn't been my experience. I think we all need to have a balance. And especially when you've been doing this. Now, if you're doing this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, doing the high level fruits, I believe you can get away with that. But at some point, when you're doing this more long term, because the fruit diet is really a what we call an elimination diet. It's a correcting diet. It's really, you're really just eating your water. So we do need, but when we're talking about, at some point, you know, when you're on an eliminative diet, at some point your body is going to want to rebuild itself with raw materials. And those raw materials are, you know, fats and proteins. So and largely fats. And so the thing is that, you know, increasing the nut consumption, the oil consumption. My thing is that we need all the things that get demonized in the nutrition world, fat, mm-hmm. oil, salt, sugar. We need all of these things. We like all of these things for good reason.
Right.
We just need to do our best to eat them in the best form possible.
Right.
If we can eat them in the best form possible, in the best way, in the best balanced way, then we can have an optimal level, a high level of health.
Hmm.
So that's what I've found to be true. But when you ask the question, what is raw food? Essentially, we're talking fruits, vegetables, herbs, nuts, seeds. But again, everything is on the table. It's just the form. And when we think about the form, I say there's two main reasons why. Because the next question could be, well, what's the advantage of a raw food diet? Well, there's two. The two primary advantages. One more is beyond shadow of a doubt is water. We want to, you know, there's so much emphasis on drinking water. Some people drink up to a gallon or more water. I say that's too much water. Right. The problem is that when you eat cooked food, you need to drink that much water to offset the cooked food, right? Versus eating your water. When you're eating your water, then, you know, animals in nature are not drinking gallons of water a day. They're drinking very little water a day, even the fruitarians. Mm-hmm. But because they're eating their water.
Yeah. So
water is very important, and we should get our water, because even the water, we got to question the water source. You know, a lot of this water that gets sold, people buying water, it's an unregulated industry. And we don't know the sources of that water, but that's a whole nother conversation.
Right. true.
And that's another rabbit hole.
Exactly.
I don't want to go down. I want to stay focused. The second reason, and this is just as important, the second reason we want to do raw is for the enzymes. Now I say that, you know, food is a relationship, right? We all have a relationship with food.
Yes.
And like any relationship, in order for a success in that relationship, it needs to be a give and take. Mm-hmm. Right? We give into the relationship, we take from the relationship. Right. But it can't just be a give and a take.
Right.
And our relationship with food is the same way. Now, if we're eating cooked food, there's gonna be more of a take than a give. And why is that? Because if your food don't have enzymes, now your body has to tap into its enzyme bank, which is limited. Mm. It's been shown that after age 27, 28, you stop producing enzymes dramatically. Like it goes from, like, say, a tablespoon to a dropper.
Mm. Wow.
You could even see how we age. We don't age much from 20 to 30, but from 30 to 40, it really starts to speed up. And that's mainly because our enzyme bank goes dramatically down, because the body's saying, like, well, I want to preserve what I have, or else if I keep using enzymes at this rate. Because again, it's just like you could get bruised, right? Mm-hmm. And when you're 20, 18, your body just heals it like that, or you get a cut,
right?
But then as you age, that cut don't heal the same way. That bruise don't go away
as quickly, right?
You see, and this all deals with enzymes. So we always want to have enzymes in our food. Now, that even goes another level. Like when you follow, you follow the tradition of Ann Wigmore, they were big into fermented foods. Mm-hmm. They had what they call, I believe it was longevity soup or something of that nature. But it was basically, you know, they were into things in terms of culturing foods like kimchi, sauerkraut, things like that, that not only have, because, you know, you could take cabbage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cabbage has enzymes.
Right.
But if you put it in a saltwater solution, now it starts to create an extra level of it's almost the cabbage becomes pre-digested. Like there's another layer of enzymes that is created from letting that cabbage culture into sauerkraut. Now you do that. Now that's bringing in a whole nother layer of enzymes. Wow. So enzymes is huge.
That's a big deal.
Just as important, I put it right up there, 1A, 1B, with water and enzymes. Those are the two probably primary reasons, at least on a physical standpoint, that we should concentrate primarily on raw foods.
Hmm. Okay.
Especially now with fruits, because see, fruits are like, you got fruits on the top end, you got like 98, 99% water to maybe even a banana or something that's more starchy, still has water and it still has a high content of water. But when you're eating vegetables, nuts, seeds, things of that nature that's more protein and fat dominant, it becomes important to try to culture these foods because our bodies have a much more difficult time breaking down vegetables with the cellulose and breaking down nuts and seeds with the fats. You know, when we culture them, then these the proteins get broken down into simpler proteins, and so do the fats, where now is very little energy that the body has to put out. So it's a lot of give. They now give us very little take. So that's even something as a 25 year raw food that I'm working on. That's how I'm trying to level up. Like, I can say for the last 25 years, I haven't done a whole lot of fermented foods, but that's something I'm trying to level my game up and including those foods. So right now I just take the easy route and buy them. I buy the sauerkrauts and the kimchis and those kind of things and mix with my raw cuisine. But you know, it's a constant evolutionary journey. We always want to be leveling up. We always want to be seeing how we can improve and not get comfortable with where we're at.
Good. Very good point. Good point. But now, how do you ensure that you're getting the necessary nutrients from a raw food diet?
Well, you got to eat as balanced as possible. And this is where I really begin to disagree with the high-level fruitarians. Now, I will always say we are fruitarian apes. You know, I do believe fruit is our number one food. However, one, if we're out of our natural environment where a lot of these fruits grow, that's a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
So being in these northern cities,
yes,
it's great that we can go right down the corner or even go on your app or, you know, get your fruit delivered.
Exactly.
But to not be where the sun is dominant, to not be in nature in that way is a huge part. You know, one of the things being in this lifestyle, I've seen the people before me that have been also doing it. I'm walking in their shoes. Typically at the point where I'm at now, I find that a lot of these folks will find a life. They will retreat and live in places like the Caribbean, South America, Central America, you know, after 20 or 30 years of, or even Florida for that matter, where at a certain point they either their body is telling them they need more. So that's a big, big part. Like the sun, like forget the food. We don't factor in the energy direct from the sun. You know, I just had the beautiful luxury of actually coming back from Jamaica. I noticed that I still have my glow.
Your glow.
I'm trying to hold on to it as much as I can. We've had a few nice days, so Look, I try my best, even in this environment, to be out in the sun as much as I can, no matter how cold it is, and definitely when it's hot. I'm definitely taking advantage. But the sun is a big, big piece. Again, eating as balanced as possible. So, you know, as I said before, we need fat. We need salt. We need salt. like salt is, I mean, it's, I can't explain how valuable it is. Now, of course, we need it in the best way. And we need it definitely in a balanced way. But salt, I'm gonna tell you, like even being a avid coconut water, you know, only, I mean, I don't know if you're gonna ask me about this later. Maybe I'm jumping ahead, but I have to say this now because the best tasting fruits and vegetables grow along the coast of where salt water is. So especially coconuts. When you have coconuts that growing along the saltwater coast, it's pulling that salt water and it's filtering it and distilling it perfectly in the coconut. And you can taste that salt, and that is the most divine tasting experience.
Amazing.
Because of that salt. Because what is salt? Salt is alkaline. You know, when you talk, all these people want to talk about sea moss. Well, what makes sea moss have all these minerals? This is salt.
Interesting.
This is salt. And salt is electric.
Yes.
Salt is a conductor of electricity. We are electrical beings.
That's true. So true. Exactly.
We need the salt, man. You know, one of my favorite, from a culinary perspective, you know, when I teach my food courses, I go, you know, I have a deep reverence for tomato. And I'm very picky about tomatoes. You know, I usually opt for the smaller tomatoes and the ones that are different colors, different shapes. That's really just some game on the food level when you go into your market, when you see produce. Especially fruits, it should be different. It should colors. Be variants. Be all the same color, same size, same this. That don't exist in nature. That's man getting in the way. So tomatoes, because tomatoes naturally have salt. And that's why tomatoes are so versatile. From a culinary perspective, they make all of these condiments from salsa to ketchup to barbecue sauce to all of these different things are rooted, have their root in tomato. So tomatoes are just an awesome fruit.
Right.
It's an awesome fruit. So, but yeah, we need to really just have as wide of a range as possible. You know, I encourage people to go into international markets, to try to eat as much exotic fruits. If you enter fruits, you do the exotic fruits. You got to do the fatty fruits. You do the salty fruits like olives. You just hit the rainbow, all the colors, all of the greens, all of your different culinary herbs, and then of course your nuts and seeds. You know, so if you're doing a balanced variety, different foods, and again, is, you know, that again, what we ingest is one thing, but really, you know, getting sun, getting proper rest, getting, you know, like it's really just a system of life that ensures that not only the food that we take in is optimal, that it gets assimilated in the most efficient way as well. And our assimilation is going to be dictated by our environment, by our relationships, by the way we sleep, the way we exercise. All of these things have to be part of a balanced program. And that will ensure that we're getting balanced nutrients.
Quick question, back to salt, because I know what you're saying about the some of the foods containing salt. But what about people who add salt to their food? Because I think therein lies the problem when it comes to excess sodium in our body.
Yes. Well, again, it goes back to you know being able to assimilate it. Now, when we talk about adding salt, now as a chef, I'm adding salt, but I'm very careful about the kind of salt that I'm adding. It's pretty much limited to sort of your Celtic sea salt. I like that. I like that one.
Right. Okay.
I like real salt. Real salt is an American base salt from Utah. That one is really good. I really like that one. I would be cautious about the Himalayan salt.
The Himalayan sea salt.
I would be cautious with that one. I've tasted some of them and I get a weird aftertaste. And it was later I found out that some of them were tested to find out that there's some suspect ingredients.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not really from Himalayan or whatever that is. So,
well, yes.
You know, it's sometimes clear. We got to really trust our intuition and trust. But that's what I found to be the good ones, the real salt, the Celtic sea salt, and the black salt. Black salt is a salt that you find in the Indian market.
I heard of that.
You find that in the Indian markets. And it's not black. It is black when they harvest it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pink and it's like more of a powder than it is a crystal. And they use it in Ayurvedic, it's part of the Ayurvedic practice because what it does, it has a sulfur quality to it. It has that sulfur like smell. So I really like that one. Now, sometimes if it's not what I found, that's like not all black salt are the same. Like if it's more grainy than a powder, then I wouldn't trust that.
Hmm.
It has to be more of a powder than it has to be like a granule.
I see.
So those are the salt. Now, as far as adding salt, I'm not against that. All right. As far as adding salt, I'm not against that. I have an affinity for salt.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
I think that adding, I mean, like, because like, even for example, like, even some of my fruits, I like to just sprinkle a little dash of salt
on your fruit.
Like one of my favorites is papaya. You know, I take a little papaya, just sprinkle a little salt, and it's just like, wow, it's amazing. Because, you know, papayas are really sweet.
Yes, they are.
If you get a really good one, it's really sweet. And I'm not really, you know, my palate, I like more the spice and the hots and the sours. You know, I have what we call an evolved palate. Not that my palate is better. It's just that some people naturally, as a chef, I see it every day.
Yes.
But some people have more of an affinity for sweet foods and some have more of an affinity for maybe salt and spice. And I'm one of those salt, spicy people, you know? So I definitely appreciate more like doing a little salt, like on my coconut meat.
Yes.
Just a little sprinkle, like the black salt is like nice. Really? So a little salt I feel can be helpful. Obviously, again, everything in balance, you know, because even you know, I can hear the people, I can just hear them saying, well, what about my high blood pressure?
Exactly.
I'm gonna say this.
Yes,
it's about high blood pressure.
Yeah.
First of all, no one ever at least no one to my knowledge ever got cured giving up salt. Like anybody I've known that has high blood pressure and they stop eating salt, their high blood pressure don't go away.
It's usually other factors.
Yes, it's other factors, right? Because Now, one theory that I did heard, I haven't confirmed this with my own research, but I did hear that commercial salt has glass, has a percentage of glass in it, and it's the glass in the commercial salt that is creating the scarring in the veins and arteries. That's yes, because we know that high blood pressure is the scarring of those sensitive vessels in our body. And now the heart has to pump harder, has to work harder, raises the pressure.
Yes.
I said, wow, well, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised knowing everything, all the other dangers that's in commercially processed food.
Good point.
So to know that maybe there's a percentage of glass in commercial salt makes sense. But to demonize salt, my professional opinion, that is incorrect.
Interesting. Now, and speaking about
salt, yes.
And speaking about people with, let's say, diabetes, high blood pressure, you know, all those chronic illnesses, have you noticed that raw food diet is best for people like that? Or do they get those sicknesses when they are raw foodies?
Yeah, see, okay, so the key word, when you're looking at those illnesses,
mm-hmm.
is chronic. And I say that because in order for a disease to develop to a chronic state, it had to be an acute illness and disease long before that, meaning that there was a series of acute diseases. I mean, by the time we reached the stage of diabetes,
mm-hmm.
time we reach the stage of high blood pressure. I mean, these are really just these are the intermediate stages between ultimately, now you're talking about cancer,
mm-hmm.
stroke, you know, like almost like, you know, terminal illnesses.
Yeah.
So we got to really put it in perspective. We're talking about these chronic illnesses that this didn't happen yesterday.
It takes over a certain amount of time.
Exactly. This took your whole life to develop.
True.
20, 30, 40, 50 years. All right. So now we want to go raw and expect, you know, we want that microwave success.
Yeah.
We live in this microwave culture.
That's right.
But nature don't work that way. Now, going on a raw food diet is the first step. It is a good step. And this is why, you know, I can really point to somebody like Orvel who puts people on the fruit.
Yes.
Because the fruit is going to work wonders. It's going to really accelerate someone's healing because the fruit is, it's an eliminative and corrective diet.
Yeah.
It's not a diet, in my opinion. Now he's been practicing it at least from what I can see as a maintenance diet.
Yes.
Now I know he eats other things. I know he does eat raw cuisine, and I know I know he's not necessarily eating raw cuisine every day.
Right.
So it's not like he's just 100% fruit. But if for someone to do a fruit challenge when they're dealing with chronic disease is one of the best steps.
Yeah.
One of the best initial steps.
Yes.
Now that's going to be one part.
Mm-hmm.
You got to look at probably at least 10 to 15, 20 different factors when somebody wants to make the decision to go on a journey towards health and longevity. You know, where the chronic disease is not central to their everyday existence.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so the diet is going to be one thing. But that's obviously a foundational piece.
Yes.
But yeah, we got to understand that these things just didn't happen just
overnight.
Like that.
Right.
And it's going to take some time. It's going to take some commitment.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to find joy and love in the journey. Just like we indulged, you know, on the dark side of the damaging foods and drinks and habits, right? We found some joy, I'm sure. In that.
Yes.
So now we have to find, if we want that for ourselves, and we should all want that.
Right.
But if we want that for ourselves, then we should also, because it's not going to be comfortable. It's not going to be necessarily easy to journey back into a balanced, optimal, healthy state.
Right. Most definitely. Definitely. And you know, that brings me to my next point, because you have a vast amount of knowledge on this topic. And obviously, I can have a 6-hour podcast and not get through all that you know. But I mentioned how you, for the past 20 years, you have hosted numerous health retreats in the U.S. and internationally. Exactly where do these health retreats take place, and what can we expect to experience during these retreats?
Yeah, well, being fresh off the retreat.
Yes.
Right, timely question, because, you know, one of the great things is, again, my first response to it is just a deeper level of rest. You know, all of us in these cities, especially we live in these cities.
Yes.
You know, we're on a hamster wheel. We're just going nowhere fast.
Yes.
You know, we're trying to run it. We're trying to run each other over for what? Where are we going?
Thank you, bro.
Yeah. And it's so important to get like a level of rest, just to not think about anything, not to do anything. We really run ourselves basically to the finish line of life
quickly,
and we often, you know, it's one of the most unfortunate things to see. With, I'm sure you've had loved one that's passed, and more often times than not, that loved one is either mad or angry because they know it's the end.
Yeah.
And that's one of the saddest things to see. You know, the end of life should really be a celebration. It should be, you know, something that, okay, yeah, this is the final rest. And I'm ready.
Yeah.
You know, and that's always been my motivation. It's always motivated me. So remind me of your question again. I got off track.
Yeah. No, because you have a lot of deep insight into things here, man. But I mentioned, I know you're doing these retreats in the
U.S. Oh, the retreat. Yes, yeah. The retreat.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're talking about rest. That was one, rest.
Rest right there.
Two, I touched on it already, was the sun. You know, we take the sun for granted. We live in these seasonal environments, and while I appreciate the spring and summer months,
I do too.
The fall to a certain extent, you know, we can get uninterrupted sun for the most part. I recommend that anybody that comes to my retreat, you try to get at least an hour a day, you know, most of your body exposed to the sunlight. I also started a sun gaze, implemented a sun gaze. So in the morning sun, we do a sun gaze meditation. So it's an eyes open guided meditation, and we really connect with the sun. We allow the sun, when you sun gaze, you look right into the sun.
Really?
That sun stimulates, it goes into the eye. It stimulates, it's a direct stimulation to the pineal gland.
Pineal,
the pineal gland regulates all of the other glands in the body. So it's a very powerful experience. It's a powerful meditation. Of course, I teach my food culinary classes.
Okay.
So it's great because, you know, I say that we get a chance to get real sun, breathe real air,
yes,
and eat real food. the fruit is just on a whole, you know,
another level.
Tasting real fruit. I don't hardly ever eat bananas. Here in America, we get the Cavendish, and even the organic, I mean, they're just, again, they don't have, and this is why also, you know, it's funny because, man, we had these papayas. Bro, let me tell you, I mean, the papayas was the highlight of, they stole the show for the whole week. And I'm going to tell you, as much as I love salt.
Yes.
And as much as I love to put salt on my papaya, these papayas were so divine. I had no desire to put salt on the papaya.
Really?
Now you can ask why. I mean, I still could have put salt. The food had the salt in it. The papaya, again, the soil. Where does the salt come from? These papayas are grown in real soil.
Wow. Right.
So I'm gonna taste the salt where I'm not gonna need to feel like I need to compliment this papaya with some additional salt.
You tasted the salt in the papaya.
It tasted complete. I'm not gonna say I tasted the salt.
Okay, okay.
It tasted complete. Look, I'm gonna mess this up. Put anything additional. So again, getting out of these environments where everything is manipulated. We all are surrounded with EMFs, Wi-Fi,
yes.
Unnatural light, unnatural, everything is unnatural right here.
Right, yes, yes, so yeah.
When I'm in a natural environment, the sun, I call it being in sun culture. Sun culture, you know, I take this off. I take these off. Wow. It sets the tone. Because it stimulates the, as we know, the serotonin, right. Creates that nice circadian rhythm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which then once the sun goes down, now at 8, 9 o'clock, you are ready for bed. You are ready for bed. And of course, so we do my classes, so we're eating real food.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing my thing, as a teacher of raw cuisine, and then we finish the night with I'll guide the meditation, where that's a closed eyes, what I call moon meditation, as the moon takes over the night sky.
Yes.
And so it's just a wonderful, you know, every element has its place. From meditation to the sunbathing,
yes.
To just connecting with nature in that way. Cause you know, like we're right on the water. So we're just hearing the water, the waves just come in, and that becomes meditative. Of course we're doing, we do yoga every day, and there's massage that we have as well. So it's just a well-rounded experience. And then, last but not least, we do a fasting day.
I'm
sure you're going to ask me about that. But
yeah, that's my next question.
We do a coconut water fasting day. And, because again, we got to honor this vessel.
Yes.
The best way to honor it is to say, you know what? I'm giving you the day off. At least one day a week, right? Most people get 2 days off during the week.
Yeah.
But what about honoring the thing that is blessing you, that's just doing, that's giving you all of this life and vitality? You want to give it at least one day off a week. So we do that during the retreat as well.
Wow. Awesome. Now, how long is the are the retreats?
Oh, yeah. 7 days.
7 days. And you have them mostly in Jamaica?
Yeah, mostly in Jamaica. And I normally do them, well, you know, with our worldly events of the past years.
Yes.
It's been 4 years, so this is the first time since 2020. But normally is once a year. I was considering maybe going back this summer and organizing a retreat over the summer, but I'm still deciding. But as of now, it's once a year, and I typically in February.
Oh, typically in February. Oh, okay. When it's cold here, it's warm over there.
There you go. That's part of the reason.
Yes.
You know, break up this winter flow.
And, right.
You know, just enjoy the sun and the energy, you know, when it's cold here.
Okay. But now talk about coconut, the importance of coconut water and fasting as a way to detoxify. Why are all these things important to the body?
Yeah. Fasting is the original, I call it OG.
I was gonna say OG.
The original OG medicine. And it's not that the fasting, one thing I try to really impart and teach with people is that your body is a self-healing machine. It wants you to live. It wants to always correct imbalances. Our system of medicine and people's understanding of the body is that it needs to be stimulated. It needs to be told to heal, and that's the furthest thing from the truth. Our body, again, just as much as you cut yourself and the body will begin to coagulate and begin to heal without being told to do so.
Right. Yes.
Everything in the body that happens, even within the body, why have we lost trust that is not also true?
Right.
So really with fasting now gives your body room to do that in the most efficient way. How can the body put all of this energy into processing food in the most efficient way when it has to correct as well? It can. You're making it very hard. So what the body does is tries to shut off the appetite. Because when we get sick, we're not in desire of any type of food.
Right.
Okay. The digestive secretions don't happen. So if we continue to feed the body and we're dealing with either acute illness and chronic illness. Now chronic, it's different because chronic illnesses have developed over years and years and years.
Right.
Years of warning of signals. Right, that we just ignore and we just continue to be controlled by what I call this beast. Right, we just control, no different than any alcoholic or sugarholic, carboholic.
Mm-hmm.
So, any of these addictions, we just fall victim to that. We fall victim to these deadly habits. And fasting is a way to really say, you know, body, you know, first of all, I'm going to give you the floor and I'm going to allow you to begin to correct. Yeah. And the body will do it in the most efficient and best way. So again, there's a level of, and again, that goes back under the umbrella of rest.
Right.
This is where rest is so important. Sleep is so important. You know, all of these things are even more important than what we eat. Getting proper rest, you know, and I separate rest from sleep. Because sleep is a level of rest.
Right.
We have sleep. And then I put meditation in its own category as well, because meditation is like a waking sleep. You put this animal to sleep on a physical level, but then you opened up your different level of mind that could connect is something greater than this.
Right.
Okay. So it's all part of like just really living and connecting with your best self, your best life. And fasting, you know, and even just to get into the type of fasting, you know, when I wrote my book, I don't have a copy of it. I was looking for a copy of it to plug it.
Yes. But,
you know, it was Paradise Health. And at the time when I decided to drink only coconut water, you know, this is a decision I made 20 something years ago. When I really was getting into coconut water and starting to use it as a fast, because when I started raw foods, this is important. When I started raw food diet, I was doing a lot of water fasting. You know, I was doing distilled water, spring water, and what would happen? Now I know this doesn't happen to people who fast generally, but what would happen to me is that once I would break the fast, I would overindulge in food. Really? So I knew that there was something not right with that. So I began, I really thought that, I said, well, I'm not going to fast if I'm going to have this desire to almost make up for the days that I fasted.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I'm eating double.
Yes.
For the next week.
Yes.
Said, no, this
that's something not right.
With this. So when I fasted with coconut water for the first time, wow, I wasn't, not only was I not hungry during the fast, I didn't have the ravenous desire when I came back to food.
Really?
It was a real game changer.
Really?
Real game changer. In fact, I just had way more energy. It just felt so complete. And really, it became just a, now I, from that point, I made it a foundation, not only water, but food. You know, I say coconut water. You know, I talk about it in my book because, you know, people talk about the quote unquote master cleanse.
Right. I heard of that.
You know, you take the cayenne pepper and the, you know, honey or use maple syrup and what's the other thing? Oh, some lemon, lime.
Right.
They always use some kind of thing to flush the bowels.
Right.
See, you don't need that with the coconut water.
Really?
You don't need it. Why?
Really?
Coconut water is a whole food. And a water at the same time. So it has the advantage even over fresh juices that when we take fruit or vegetables and we push them through a juicer, that's now a processed food.
Okay.
Coconut water is whole.
Hmm.
As God, nature gives it to us.
Wow.
When you drink it, it goes through the entire system.
Nice.
No enema is needed. No herb is needed. You just need to drink the coconut water and it will flush everything out. It will allow your body to do it without these extra stimulants, as I call them.
Yeah. How much coconut water do you need?
So if you're drinking as a fast, it can be anywhere from a half a gallon to a gallon. Probably closer to a gallon if you're fasting and you're not accustomed to fasting.
Right.
Now, if you're drinking coconut water as your only water during the day, then closer to a half a gallon to at least a quart to a half a gallon. It's really not that much that you need. Again, this is a very fulfilling water.
Really?
As a water, and it's also, you know, and it also going to depend on what else you eat, because if you eat a lot of fruits, again, that's a high water content food as well.
That's true.
So you're going to be urinating plenty.
Yes.
Not necessarily drinking that much water. You know, so yeah, that's pretty much your low and high limits.
But my next question has to be, where do you go to get quality coconut water, my brother?
Well, I mean, you know, one thing, you know, my clientele has informed me more than once, because obviously Yes, one of the things that I've been blessed to be able to get is the coconut in the husk. You know, obviously I've opened up many hundreds of thousands at this point. You know, I've given workshops on how to open them and deal with it.
Really?
Oh yeah. I've been doing that a long time. I do it at the festivals and all that.
Wow.
It becomes like a show. And I love it. Right. Hacking them open. But look, you don't need to have a machete. You don't need to be able to hack open coconut. Now, if you want it in that way, yes, you're gonna have to do that. But there's so many other options, quality options. Obviously, getting it in the shell intact is going to be your best option.
Right.
If you can't do that, even getting it now, you can get it. A lot of times I'll see it refrigerated in the plastic bottle.
Mm-hmm.
It's been, what's it called? It's pressurized.
Pressurized.
Yeah, it's gone through HPP. That's what they call it. It's a high pressure pasteurization without cooking, without heat. So it goes through immense pressure. A lot of these juices you'll see, it's not just the coconut water. It's a technology they developed where they can pressurize a juice and it'll have like a 2-month refrigerator shelf life.
Mm.
And it will be, you can take, and it does, it tastes better than like if it was pasteurized. There is a level. Now, does it taste as good as if you just did it fresh? Of course not.
No,
but it's a healthy compromise. I've drinking plenty of it that's been pressurized, but even at the very minimum, because you can find those varieties in all of your health markets, your Whole Foods, and all of that, right?
Okay,
like Harmless Harvest is one, and you know, usually you'll see it's like the water is pink. And the pink is a natural occurrence. People always ask me, like, it is a natural thing
pink?
That happens.
Really?
Huh. Yeah, it's because of the mineral content of the water. But yeah, I'm drinking plenty of pink coconut water. It's a natural occurrence. But even in the carton where it has been pasteurized, in those Tetra boxes, those like little square.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are fine.
Really?
Fine. Actually, people have told me they fasted with that and it's produced about, like it will move their bowels.
So it's good quality from coconut water.
Yeah. I mean, you want it to say 100%. Like you didn't want it to be like, you know, a bunch of additives, but most of them that I find in the markets are good. So there's many options.
Okay.
Yeah, many options. Again, and these are all healthy. I mean, look, we live in unnatural environment. We are making compromises just by being here.
Yes, we are.
So people always want to hold up the, you know, the unrealistic aspect of, oh, you know, is this organic and this is this and that and that. It's like, ain't nothing about your life right now organic.
Not 100%.
Now you want to hold up, you want to bring the judge and jury.
Yes, yes.
So
yes.
And it, you know,
keeping it real, brother.
It's hypocritical. it's hypocritical.
You're keeping it real. You keep
yeah.
it real.
Yeah. So yeah. Okay. Right, we got to keep it all the way real.
Yes. Well, this has been great, man. But you know what? I also understand that you are into astrology.
Oh man.
For a brief moment, talk about that.
You want to talk, man.
Oh man!
I mean, how much time we?
I got 5 minutes, brother.
No, you know, astrology has been a beautiful, just a healthy, beautiful art form. One thing I say now, I'm into the sidereal Indian, traditional Indian astrology. It's very, very similar to the Western astrology that most people practice, but what most people don't understand is that Western astrology is what we call fixed astrology, meaning that it's not based on what we see in the stars. It's really a seasonal astrology that says Aries happens with the spring equinox.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we know spring is like the first season. Even though I actually say that winter is really our first season, because you know, night or the day begins at night. So our year should begin at night. Winter is the night time of the year.
Right.
But anyway, they have fixed Aries to the spring equinox, and the constellation is still in Pisces. That's why we are in the age of Pisces right now. Now, there's a what we call the precession of the equinox, where there's a shift that every 71 and a half years, there's a degree shift back. So as we go to Pisces, at some point, the spring equinox is going to be in Aquarius. And that is when we will be in the age of Aquarius.
Right.
Now, we are not nowhere near, well, I wouldn't say we're not nowhere near close, but we're probably, I don't think any of us in our lifetime will be here for the age of Aquarius.
Is that right?
Yes, yeah, right? I think it's either 100 or, I have to look at the degree, but each degree, again, is 71 and a half years. So if you have to do is go to a sidereal calendar or sidereal, what they call it, where you can see where it falls right on the spring equinox to see what degree in Pisces. So on March 24th, we want to see what degree the sun is in Pisces.
Okay.
So if it's 20 degrees Pisces, then that lets you know there's 30 degrees in the zodiac. So that lets you know it's 10 times 71 and a half, which is 710 years. So
really?
I know it's less than that, but I know it's at least 100 years.
Before the age of Aquarius. Wow.
So we're on the cusp. So there's elements of our society where Aquarian aspects is, you know, because Aquarius is technology, for example. Aquarius is about the people.
Okay.
So Aquarius is about the human family, connect, like everybody being unified, everybody being connected. It's about networks. It's about, again, technology. Technology is big with Aquarius. So again, those elements are, you know, where Pisces largely is spirituality.
Mm.
And, you know, one of the things, if we go back 2000 years, one of the things that was really dominant or really taking over when we went into the age of Pisces was how religion shaped everything. You know, there was a lot of religious wars and basically how religion just kind of took over. So that's kind of, again, more, you know, that those are our 2000 year cycles.
Interesting.
Or actually it's 21. It's 21, whatever that math is, 71 and a half times 30. That'll give the amount of years, which is about 2,100 years, is an age. But, you know, astrology, just on a more personal level,
right,
is, again, like I said, following the traditional Indian astrology, which, you know, because it was the Greeks, going back to that, I wanted to say that. It was the, you know, people following Western astrology, you're following really Greek astrology, which they were ignorant of the fact of really watching the stars and understanding that, you know, again, because if an astronomer looks at the stars, it's going to match up with a sidereal astrologer is looking at the charts.
Oh, is that right?
That is right. And from my anecdotal experiences, from looking at as many charts as I've looked at, and many people, and then including myself,
I'm like,
sidereal is the real deal.
Really.
So it's become a you know, just a wonderful compliment to everything that I do.
Yes.
A love and a hobby.
Monkey?
For Monkey. It, but then just really also under. Yeah, good job.
Tiger.
You know,
Tiger.
Good job. Good job.
Ho.
Okay. So it's just a wonderful. Okay. Talent. Okay. I'm doing it. Yes. Talent. Good job. It's just a great. I mean, had I known you was gonna ask me, I would have told you to send me your birthday. What's your birthday?
March 16th.
Okay, so this is a good example because you're right on the cups.
Pisces.
well, right, because let me make sure I got this right, because I always get a little confused. So March 15th is the beginning of Pisces. Yes. So March. Yes. So yes. So Pisces begins at March 15th. It goes to April 14th. So if you were born like later, you would might think if you were born like March 20 something, you would think, oh, I'm an Aries.
Right.
That's still Pisces.
I see.
So you're at the beginning of Pisces.
According to the Western astrology, basically Pisces ends in March.
Right. No, but you're in the beginning degrees of Pisces.
Really?
So you're a true Pisces in a sense. Well, but the thing about sidereal astrology is that we would need your, you know, obviously your time. I mean, I call it a shotgun reading. you know, since you asked me, we can, because really what we, more important is not your sun sign.
Mm-hmm.
More important is your moon sign and your rising sign, especially. So if you want to, I could plug it in real quick.
Well, actually,
we don't have time. We can do
it. Time, man. This has been great. But I appreciate you, man. And let me just ask you, how can my audience, though, find out more about you? Give me your links, your information, so I can tag you and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, so I would first and foremost maybe shout out my YouTube channel. And you could just go to youtube.com/Kepra. Just put my name in. I should come right up. I'm on Instagram at Kepra Raw. At Kepra Raw, and I often will, at least once or twice a month, I like to go live, and I'll go live simultaneously on IG and YouTube. You know, my web, you know, I you know, big part, probably the biggest part of my business is the juice cleanse. You know, that's what keeps me busy throughout the week, and the weekend is doing the juice cleanses. So that's Kepra's Raw Food Juice Bar.net. And then you can also find my book on there. I'm getting new books in, so that'll be a great thing if you want an autographed copy. I mean, my book is on Amazon.
It's on Amazon? Oh, good.
Yeah, but if you want an autographed copy, you got to order through my website. And that, you know, I really don't get nothing for the Amazon book. But if you order from me, and I also have a YouTube course, and it's on my website, where it's six classes. It's privately, you got to pay for it, but I send you the links. I grant you permission to watch it, because it is a private class.
Nice.
I think yeah that's about it. Yeah, so Instagram, YouTube, my website. You can join my newsletter, and you know, keep up with me when I'm doing classes and retreats. I may have, if you're in the DMV area, I am planning to maybe do some food classes in April.
In DC?
Yeah, in DC. So just staying abreast with that, getting in tune with that. Definitely.
Nice.
And then, you know, I also do private consultations and things of that nature. I haven't really been doing much of those with my time constraints, but I am also available for that as well.
Awesome. Amazing, man. You, I'm telling you, bro, you're the real deal, man.
Thank you.
Real
it.
Deal.
Kepra
New, on behalf of Body Scope of New York, that's my nonprofit, and 6 Weeks of Fitness, I truly want to thank you for coming on my show today.
Wow. It's an honor. Thanks for inviting me and giving me the opportunity to share in what I do with your audience. I look forward to sharing this with my audience as well. And yeah, man, blessings and love to you, brother.
Oh, thank you. And to my listeners, I truly hope this program was informative, encouraging, and inspiring, and that you will continue tuning in to my 6 Weeks of Fitness podcast. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for the show, please leave them in the comment section below or email me at vince@sixweeks.com. And don't forget, we don't stop exercising because we grow old. We grow old because we stop exercising. My brother.
Nice. I like that.